you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
What if Hannibal defeated Rome? It's a question many of us ask, but the discussions I see tend to revolve more around the how he would have won. The tactics, the strategy, the logistics. Where would he have gotten his siege engines? Could he have raised more mercenaries somehow? How could he have countered Fabius's strategy of skirting around him? Few go much further and ask the next question. But we have a time machine. We are able to cut through the fabric of the universe and explore alternate histories, even the most unlikely ones. We are not so interested in how Hannibal breached the city walls. In this world we're sending you to, he did. And the Romans, cowering in their homes as their city is being sacked all around them, are not in the frame of mind to question what went wrong. Their only concern now is survival. You will join one of these Roman families. You will take on the role of a servant in the home of a senator named Quintus Septimus Marius. He never returned from a recent battle. His family is still desperate for news, but as the looting and raping rages all around them, Docenia has grown increasingly concerned with the safety of her children. What would that have been like? Let's find out. Before we launch into today's story, a very brief word about a long-form story I'm creating for our patrons. It's called Franklin's Tomb, and it places you among the crew of the doomed Franklin expedition in the 1840s. As a world-splitting escape artist, you have managed to survive some of history's most horrendous disasters. But can you survive a doomed expedition to the Arctic where no one survived? Join me on Patreon to find out. Go to patreon.com and run a search for The Twilight Histories. And now, for today's story, this is The Claws of Carthage by myself, Jordan Harbor. Thunderous pounding shakes the door, reverberating through the atrium and down the hall like the clamor of a battering ram against a fortress gate. You meet the wide eyes of Decenia, Floria, and young Lucius. The boy, barely 13, is draped in his father's toga, weighing down his frail form as though it were the legionary armor of a giant. Lucius rises from his couch. "What are you doing?" Decenia hisses.
"They'll break down the door if we don't open it," Lucius says, "just like they always do."
"They didn't last time," Decenia says, her voice brittle as she surely clutches at the fading hope that perhaps the invaders will be too drunk or too lazy to press their wild passions this time. your hiding spots, both of you, now. Another crash echoes through the house, the sound of wood splintering under relentless blows.
I seek the house of Quintus Septimus Matius,
comes a voice, rough and thick with a Carthaginian accent, the words mangled in their passage through foreign lips. Docenia's face pales, a flicker of fear breaking through her resolve. That's different, she says.
I'm letting them in,
Lucius says, his thin body trembling with the effort of maintaining a brave front. No, you foolish boy, Docenia says. Lucius, Floria, go to your hiding spots now! I will answer the door. You step forward, your voice wavering. I'll go with you. Docenia nods, and together you move from the cubiculum to the atrium, where the fountain lies dry and dead, a relic of better days, and then on into the vestibulum, where the door is barricaded with the few pieces of furniture that have not yet been stolen or destroyed. The pounding intensifies, the door creaking under the assault.
Open this door now, or we break it down.
The voice roars, impatience and authority mingled with a harsh Punic dialect. Docenia's resolve crumbles, her hands flying to her face in despair.
We have no choice, you say, your voice firm. Lucius is right. If they want in, they'll get in. And these men aren't drunk soldiers, I'll wager.
I can't do it, Docenia whispers, her voice breaking. I can't let it happen again. Let me, you say, your hands already pulling a piece of furniture away from the door.
No, if we make it too difficult, they might move on to the next house.
It's too late. The door shatters under a mighty blow, wood splintering as two Carthaginian soldiers crash through the barricade, their muscles corded and thick as the trunks of ancient olive trees, and they toss the furniture aside with ease, clearing the vestibulum. A third man enters, an officer by his bearing, his plumed helmet tucked under his arm, his armor battered yet polished, gleams in the dim light, each scar and dent telling a tale of years spent in the crucible of battle. His skin, dark and weathered by the fierce North African sun, stretches taut over a jawline that speaks of brutal strength and harsh discipline.
There is here, girl, Floria, daughter of Quintus Septimius Martius,
the officer says, his voice thick with the pugnacious accent of Carthage. Docenia flinches at the mention of her daughter's name. Mother's instinctive fear and rage flashes in her eyes.
What do you want with my daughter? She says.
You are Docentia Mater.
The officer's gaze turns to you, sharp and assertive.
Who are you?
I am the house servant, sir, you reply, bowing deeply.
The officer's lips curl in disdain, dismissing you with the flick of an eye.
Where is Floria?
He barks, gesturing to the soldiers, who immediately rush into the house. Docenia seems on the verge of collapse, her breath coming in gasps.
Don't worry, Mater, the officer sneers. This is a good day for you.
What do you mean?
She says, her voice barely audible. The officer turns and beckons to figures waiting just outside the door. A priest in a threadbare robe, hastily tossed over armor, his expression sullen, and a soldier with a bitter scowl, his lean body taut with muscle, his face filled with scorn. His mustache, black as pitch, droops below his chin, adding emphasis to his pouting lips.
My husband will be home soon, Docenia says.
No husband, Mater. He died at the Battle of Cumae.
We know.
He buried. I have it here.
He puts his finger on the scroll. Behind you, the scuffling of boots on stone draws your attention. The soldiers drag Floria into the atrium, her face pale with terror, her feet dragging as if weighted with lead.
This is Floria,
the officer says, rolling up his scroll and pointing it at the girl like a magistrate delivering a sentence.
Your girl, Mary Hiram,
he says, gesturing to the man with the black mustache. Come now,
hurry,
the officer snaps, switching to Punic. Your chip translates the rapid clatter of the language.
Get in here, you useless priest. We have 100 more marriages to perform before lunch.
He smacks the scroll over the back of the priest's head, driving him forward like a disobedient sheep.
Hiram, stand by your wife and don't dawdle. You're a married man now, fit to sire a troop of boys for Hannibal.
I don't want to marry a pale-faced Roman cow, Hiram mutters, his voice dripping with disdain. The officer smacks Hiram in the back of the head, a casual display of authority.
You'll get used to her, boy. A house, a servant, an old woman to cook and clean for you. You could do worse.
And look, a water fountain.
Once we get the aqueduct flowing again, it will gush like the Nile. You'll live like a king, Hiram. Now stand next to your wife and let's get this over with.
Hiram moves reluctantly to Floria's side, his eyes narrowing as he scrutinizes her.
I know you, he says in Punic, his voice low and menacing. Yes, I think this was one of the houses.
And you're one of the girls. Floria recoils, her face ashen, the meaning of his words clear despite the language barrier.
Stop sniffing at her, the officer barks, dragging Hiram back into place. Baldo, stand here and start talking like a priest. These Romans are superstitious. Make it sound like you're invoking a demon.
Baldo begins to chant, his voice a deep, quavering monotone, the words a garbled mix of Phoenician and gibberish, laden with the weight of fake ancient rites. The soldiers behind you struggle to stifle their laughter. But not Hiram. He stares at Floria with a malevolent glint in his eyes. Dusenia crumbles, fear erupting in her face as the horrific farce unfolds. The fake priest Baldo raises his hands, trembling as if in a trance, then slams them together with finality.
Done, boss, he says.
There you go, Hiram, the officer says, clapping the new groom on the back. Enjoy your wife, and remember, Hannibal wants soldiers. Make lots of boys.
He marches out, his men following swiftly behind him, probably eager to get back to their drink.
On to the next happy marriage, the officer says, raising the scroll triumphantly as he disappears around the corner.
The three of you stand in the front hall, the air thick with the scent of fear and despair. Hiram glares at Floria, his fingers twisting his mustache. Floria presses herself against the wall, trying to merge with the painted figures that adorn the plaster, her body rigid with terror. Dusenia, no longer weeping, takes a deep breath, her mind racing to find a way out of this nightmare.
Do any of you speak Phoenician? Hiram demands, his voice sharp.
I do, you reply, stepping forward. Hiram's eyes snap at you, his gaze cold and assertive.
Who are you?
I am the servant here. I cook and clean.
There was a boy here, Hiram says, his tone low and threatening. A young one, about this tall.
He raises his hand to shoulder height.
I don't think so.
Don't lie to me, servant. I saw him, and the old woman. I tried to kill him, but he ran away. Where is he?
I don't know, Dominus.
Ask her, Hiram snaps, nodding towards Dusenia.
He wants to know where Lucius is, you translate, your voice trembling.
You didn't tell him, did you? Dusenia says.
No, of course not.
He'll kill him. You can't tell him.
Well, Hiram presses his eyes narrow and suspicious.
He ran away, master. After the first night, you scared him off.
We haven't seen him since. Hiram's eyes bore into yours, disbelief flickering across his face. But he does not press the matter further. And her, he says, motioning to the Senia. I want her gone.
Master, why? You plead, your voice high-pitched in disbelief. Floria doesn't know how to cook. Dosenia and I will prepare a feast tonight to celebrate your wedding.
Hiram's eyes narrow, but after a tense moment, he nods. Fine, but make it worth my while, he mutters, turning sharply and leading Floria into one of the bedrooms. In the kitchen, the tension is palpable as you relay the conversation to Dosenia. Her face is flushed, her hands trembling slightly as she thinks. The weight of the decision she's about to make hangs heavy in the air. I need you to leave, she says, her voice low but firm.
What? What do you mean?
You stammer, caught off guard by her words.
You heard me. He doesn't want a mother-in-law roaming around his house making his life a misery. As long as you're here, he has no use for me.
I must take the role of the servant now, for the sake of my daughter, and that means you have to go.
Yes, of course, I understand, you say, the reality of the situation sinking in.
Tell him you went to the market to get supplies for tonight's meal, Dosenia adds, her mind working quickly.
Yes, that makes sense, and then I'll leave, immediately.
No, wait. She says, her voice trembling slightly as she grabs your arm. You must take Lucius with you. He's still hiding in his room. If Hiram finds him, he'll kill him.
The gravity of her words strikes you like a blow. Yes, of course. Where should we go?
I don't know. She reaches into her tunic and presses a small pouch of coins into your hand.
Take this money. It's not much, but it's all I can give you. Please, promise me you'll look after Lucius. Us women, we have a special torment when a city is captured. But like the Sabines before us, it is this torment that allows us to survive. We live, but our boys are killed. We must keep Lucius hidden. Get him out of Rome. Escape as far as you can.
Yes, of course, you say, clutching the pouch tightly. I will take care of him.
Dosenia looks sorrowfully at you as you turn to leave the kitchen to find Lucius, your mind already racing with plans to flee the city. But where will you go? Perhaps to Greece? Maybe if the money will get you there. The burden of responsibility weighs heavily on your shoulders, but you know that there is no other choice. The fate of the boy, one of the last of the lineage of ancient Rome, now rests in your hands.
The Twilight Histories is 100% member-supported. That means I rely on the support of listeners like you to keep these stories going. As I feel I need to give our supporters my absolute best, I am now producing all my long-form stories for them. These are stories that will never be released to the public. As of this recording, I have just completed part 2 of a multi-part series called Franklin's Tomb. I would normally play you a small clip, but the part I want to share is, I think, too dark for this free podcast. I did a great deal of research into what an amputation on a ship in the 1840s would have been like, and I recreated that experience based on some first-hand accounts. It's fairly grisly. I hold back a bit on the free podcast because I don't know who's listening. I've been burned before by angry listeners who can sometimes give low ratings and negative comments which affect how the show is ranked by the algorithms. I know these people are not fans, they're just passing through and want to leave a little trail of misery behind them. And in Patreon, I don't have that problem. That's because everyone in our members area is a true fan of the Twilight Histories. I've known some of these people for years. I know them and I talk with them. And because of that comfort level, I feel like I can write the way I truly want to. Go as deep as we need to go and create film reels in the imagination that span the breadth of human experience in the multiverse. Come and join me on Patreon. And I recommend you try out Franklin's Tomb, which I'm building out right now as a multi-part series. It is one of my darkest, I think. Some of the members requested it be dark. It's my job to deliver on that request. If you want a different experience, come and tell me in Patreon, and we'll have a group discussion about it. I welcome that kind of feedback and want to create worlds and stories you really connect with. Again, that's patreon.com, and run a search for The Twilight Histories. Download the Patreon app, and you can listen directly from your phone. And if you do this right now, you could be listening within a few short minutes. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to The Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.